Hello, road men, and welcome back to another episode of the A1 show. I was away in Girona last week, hence the little bit of radio silence. I had brought my microphone with me, but yeah, it just didn't prove possible to get a recording done over there. The apartment I rented in Airbnb, you can't really seem to filter Airbnb by acoustic quality, so unfortunately sound is kind of like a ping pong ball, and if you can bounce it off a wall, hard surfaces, sound generally bounces off it the exact same way. And the architecture in Girona, typical of Catalonian houses, it is beautiful, but it's a lot of wood and it's a lot of exposed brick, neither of which make particularly good recording environments. So apologies for that, and I am back today. So today I want to talk to you about why I love cycling, and this is going to be a little bit of a tangent to start off, but you're well used to that if you're a regular listener, and if you're not, sure, you're going to get used to it. So I want to talk to you about why I love cycling, and sometimes complicated but often misunderstood philosophical concept called Stoicism, and how the two of these intersect, my love for cycling and this obscure philosophical, well, it's not that obscure anymore, it's becoming more mainstream. It's been around for a long time, since about 1500. It kind of traces its origins back to Greek and then into Rome, and we've, you know, Marcus Aurelius and Epictetus and leading thinkers like that from the Roman era. Some serious hitters all throughout history have classified themselves as Stoics, and it's just a way of thinking. And over the course of this podcast, I'm gonna show you how that this way of thinking and one of the core strands of it really intersects with why I cycle and why I think cycling is such a powerful tool for bringing you happiness. So people that have subscribed to this through time are like Napoleon, John F. Kennedy. We have a bunch of modern day athletes doing it. And of course, little old me. But this all came up and sprung into my head as an idea for a podcast about 2 weeks ago, just before I traveled to Girona. And an old teammate of mine, Mark O'Callaghan from Aqua Blue, and he's not racing the bike so much anymore, and he came down to me, he said he's looking to rediscover his love of cycling, he's going to come down for a weekend and we do a bit of exploring around Wicklow and see can he find that love again. And we went out exploring through the Wicklow Mountains. We had a lovely spin, and as we rode, the conversation kind of steered as to, is there a difference between racing and riding? And there definitely is. I do them both for very different reasons. And I remember in 2013, I was riding for Stellus that year in the States, and I'd had a particularly bad crash. I'd broke collarbone, I broke my glenoid fossa, which is your shoulder. I didn't know that at the time. Why they use those obscure Latin terms is beyond me. I broke collarbone, shoulder, bunch of ribs, and I had a collapsed lung. Pretty bad doing over. And I talked to a buddy of mine who was world tour, and he was coaching me at the time, and I told him I'm finished racing, and I was recovered from the injuries at this stage. And I said to him, I didn't want to quit when I was injured, and I said, look, I'm finished racing. And he said, cool. Then he rang me up on like the Monday, like after this, as I had a talk on a Friday, and he rang me on the Monday saying, do I want to go for a ride? And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I told you last week, I'm finished. And he's like, yeah, you're finished cycling. You finished racing. You didn't say you were finished riding. And it was at that moment I thought, oh, there's a difference. And there is a big difference. And I got into cycling initially because I liked riding my bike, not because I liked racing. So long after the racing curtain comes down for me, I'll still be riding my bike. And today's podcast will attempt to explain why I will still be riding my bike. So when we think about Stoicism, it just a brief little background to give you some context as to what I'm going to talk about. So there's two real thought leaders that I follow in Stoicism. They're Marcus Aurelius and Epictetus. And the big thing with Epictetus is it's a real simple question that he asks us to consider. He wants us to separate things into two buckets: those things which we can control and those things which we can't control. And the first intersection of Stoicism and cycling happened for me in about 2012 when I heard Dave Brailsford taken over Team Sky, and he said their focus was going to be on controlling the controllables. Where have we heard that before? Separating two things into two buckets, those which we can control and those which we can't. So the Stoic philosophy was very much indoctrinated into Team Sky earlier on, controlling the controllables. So much of what happens in a race environment. So many things we can't control. We can't control the weather. We can't control the surface. We can't control how our opponents behave, our opponents' tactics. But we can control loads of stuff about us, and that's what they done. They set out to control the controllables, looking at aerodynamics, forced him to wear skin suits, looking at using those shoe covers, again focused on aerodynamics, fueling differently, warming up before a race. Sky changed cycling by looking at the controllables, focusing all their effort on them, and taking that mental brain power and capacity out of wondering what the opposition are going to do, wondering, you know, and engaging in this bitching, gossip and infighting that's often so rampant in these sort of incestuous environments like professional cycling can be. So when we take this philosophy and we extend it into life and we extend it into our interaction with cycling, you know, you can buy a really fancy car, you can buy a Lamborghini or you can buy a bike, but you can't make that bike impress people. So I can accumulate a lot of stuff as you go through life. You can accumulate watches, houses, crazy wealth, but you can't make people respect you, or you can't make your parents be proud of you. You can't control what other people do or think. You can only control your actions and your thoughts. So why are you trying to impress people with the house, with the fancy bike, with the fancy watch you bought? Instead, Epictetus teaches us, why don't we work instead on not needing to impress people? Or else, even better, work on that insecurity that leads us to think that if we impress people, that we'll be somehow a better person. And that's a teaching that I've followed for a long time, and I get a lot out of it. And there's some, like, there's some really high profile examples of Stoicism being used to, you know, better humanity. President Kennedy used it during the Cuban Missile Crisis. He used the concept of stillness, which I'm going to talk about in a minute, and the same with Napoleon, used the concept of stillness as well to win many wars. So there's some really, really powerful examples of how it's been used historically, but I want to talk about why I use it, because, and why I think you should focus on using it, because when we focus all our energy on controlling that which is within our control, so the Team Sky idea of controlling the controllables, we get to decide what messages we allow in and what messages we don't allow in. We get full control over that. So we can say, no, I'm choosing to let these messages in, or I'm choosing not to let these messages in. So Blaise Pascal, he had a quote saying, all of man's problems stem from his inability to sit quietly in a room alone. And we are in a world of constant distractions, absolute distractions everywhere, from phones to TVs to advertisements from friends and parents and co-workers vying for our time and our attention. And we move really, you know, without any mindfulness from one task to the next, never really sitting still. And I don't even think I need to say, I think all of us, when I, we'll all think of our own example. When I say what stillness is, when I say stillness, I don't mean the act of just sitting perfectly still. I'm using stillness to mean a moment of just being completely present. So think about moments you've been completely present. So for me, it's, you know, Christmas with my family, sitting at the Christmas table with my family. I'm completely present in that moment. I'm laughing at the shit Christmas cracker jokes. I'm eating the food. I'm just totally there with my family. I never think at that moment, I wonder if I get an email. I wonder if I check Twitter. It's almost like the whole world has checked out at the same time. So it's given me permission to be still, to be in the moment, to be focused. And we've all have other examples of those we can draw. For some people, it's their wedding day. For me, I know I remember after finishing exams, I always had this complete peace and calmness and stillness. There was a feeling of accomplishment, yes. But there was a feeling of, right, I'm exactly where I need to be. Because the day after exam, it was almost like fresh opportunity, but I've done everything I can up to this point, and it's not yet to the point where I need to think about what I'm doing next. So it was just a somewhat manufactured perfect stillness. And you'll find that stillness, it's not something you can buy, it's not something you can get. It's more it's a reductionist theory. It's more when you start stripping other things away that you get stillness. When you strip the exams away, when you strip the distractions away, when you strip the noise away. And that's why meditation has become so, so popular in recent years. I've spoken about meditation on this podcast. I love meditating. I know so many listeners meditate, and it's used to be, even when I was getting started in cycling, it was probably a little bit taboo or a little bit left the field to say you meditated. I think a good chunk, I don't want to say a majority, but a good chunk of my friends, and I know of show listeners, also meditate. If not habitually, they do it every now and then. And the idea of meditating is just to be present for long periods of time. But this can take years. It can take sometimes decades to get really good at this. Like, you look at the monks. And The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari is actually a cool book. That's just a tangent. The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari is a book about this lawyer who goes in search of, kind of answering, I suppose, the question we're all on the path to search. Who do I want to be, and what path do I want to take to get there? And he finds these monks, and the monk has some eternal truths for him. And yeah, it's well worth a read. But anyway, these monks, like every monk, have spent decades nearly trying to find this stillness and peace. But I found the answer, and you found the answer, and we don't even know it. So cycling is an absolute forced mastery of meditation. Like, I rode in Wicklow on, was it Sunday, with a friend, and on every hill there wasn't one thing I thought about. I didn't think about, oh, I wonder if I pay my mobile phone bill. Oh, I wonder, are the bins due out tomorrow? I wonder what's for dinner this evening. I wonder how this work situation is developing. I wonder how this investment is progressing. I didn't think about anything, only that moment. The pedal stroke, my breath, the effort, all just melted into one forced meditative state up the side of the mountain. And that, for me, is the beauty and why cycling is just so amazing. It's this meditative experience that takes lay folk, we'll use lay folk, because anyone that's not a cyclist, it takes them almost a lifetime of mastery, a lifetime of practice to achieve mastery, and we get it every time we go out cycling in this forced exertion. It's almost a survival to get up the hill. You need to put out that amount of effort, or the bike just doesn't go forward and you don't get to where you need to go. And you know, I've tried meditating. I meditate most days. Meditation's hard. Like, if you get 10-20 minutes of meditation, that's pretty good. Most people find themselves getting a little, when I say most people, I'm talking about me, I find myself getting a little bit distracted, kind of going, oh, I wonder how long I've been doing it now. My mind wanders a little bit. Or if I'm doing guided meditation, or sometimes the mind just goes off in a bit of a tangent and I start thinking about something completely different. And cycling is just such an amazing escape from just the digital bombardment we're getting. At the moment, you're on track to spending 42% of your life looking at a screen. How depressing is that? That you're going to look at either your computer or your phone for 42% of your life going forward. Cycling is such an escape from that, and that's why I absolutely love this daily sort of practice of meditation. And by allowing all the messages in and constantly looking down the road, we end up getting this kind of conditional happiness. This is if we don't filter messages. If we just let in and we don't take time to be mindful of it and to be still and decide what messages are important, what messages aren't, we just get bombarded. And oftentimes we fall victim to this conditional happiness. And this is the I'll be happy when culture. And think about the I'll be happy when culture. I'll be happy when I win that race at the end of the season. I'll be happy when I get my gravel bike. I'll be happy when I get the new S-Works carbon shoes. You get the S-Works carbon shoes, you get the gravel bike, what happens? Life just goes back to normal. So you fooled yourself into thinking, I'll be happy when. But what do? We don't learn from this. Like, this is, we are rational creatures most of the time, but this just makes no sense to me. The I'll be happy when culture, we've all experienced it. We've all got to the destination and then seen that it's a moving goalpost. I'll be happy when I make 100K. What happens? Someone gets there and then they go, they don't go, oh, I'm not happy. I'm at 100K and I'm still not happy. What they do is they change the target. Oh, maybe it's 200K I need to get to. They don't work on just being happy now. They just don't learn the lesson. So, yeah, I'm not saying on this, don't have goals, because goals are so important for an athlete. We need to have goals. What I'm saying is set the goals, have them set, and then leave them. Don't touch them again. And think about the process and immerse yourself in the process. So when I'm talking about someone's goal, what I say is, okay, that's the goal. Now let's look at the process. Now, are you in love with this process? Because if you're not in love with the process, you've picked the wrong goal. Because the process is what's going to make you happy. Because there's no destination, there's no winning any race, there's no material possession that's going to make you feel happy if you don't already feel happy. So if somebody comes to me and they say, I want to do the Dirty Kansas next year. Well, do you like riding on gravel? Do you like getting dirty? Do you like riding for 10 hours? 10 hours plus? Do you like constantly chugging down gels, bars, cakes? Do you like having a pretty sore ass for 10, 12 hours on the bike? If you're not in love with this process, that's the wrong goal for you. So although you might have seen an EF Education video and fallen in love with the romance of Lachlan Morton and Alex Howes riding Dirty Kansas, if you don't love this stuff, that's not the right goal for you. So we need to look at the goal, yes, but then examine the process. And something that I heard Tiger Woods' dad talking about, it's the word enough. He would never let Tiger Woods say the word enough. And what happens when you don't know when there's enough? It's a great attitude in a lot of ways for an athlete, because you're constantly striving for the next race win, the next race win. But you're never happy and present in the moment, because happiness is always something that's down the road. It's after I win my 10th race. It's after I win my 12th race. It's a moving goalpost and you never get there. And it'll eventually end and you look back and go, shit, I haven't been happy all along. So that's why, you know, the movie's called, and the term is called, The Pursuit of Happiness, because it's something we chase after. It's not a destination. It's a practice. And I always laugh when I hear people kind of say, oh yeah, I read that book. Like, the idea isn't just to rack up these books and just, like, on the desk sitting in front of me here, I have Marcus Aurelius Meditations. It's not about getting Marcus Aurelius's book, Meditations, and reading it, and then throwing it in at a dinner party conversation saying, oh yeah, I read Marcus Aurelius Meditations. It's not something to get to the end of. It's a pursuit, it's a practice, it's a daily, it's something you do every day. And that's what philosophy was. When you look back to ancient Greek and ancient Roman times, it was a daily practice. It was a daily practice of constantly striving and learning to be happy. And I think what we've talked about, and this is stillness, and I think that stillness is the exact same as happiness. That stillness isn't the destination. That stillness is a pursuit. And cycling every day is how I practice stillness and how I just quiet my mind in a really, really busy world. Thanks for listening.